The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
From Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
All right, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. I'm Bill Donahue. I'll be taking you through the first hour and this Sunday night, the second day of December in 2018. Our esteemed engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll talk to author Nick Hirshon about his new book, We Want Fish Sticks, the bizarre and infamous rebranding of the New York Islanders. We'll talk some Islanders hockey with Nick, have some fun. In the second half, we'll welcome in the great Olympic runner, Marty Lucori. So sit back, relax, get comfortable, enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. We got some great people with some great stories up ahead. As always, before we begin, I invite you to check us out on social media. The Facebook page is titled Sports Talk 1240, show information, so much more. Stop by, give us a look, click, give us a like. Twitter, Sports Talk, at Sports Talk 1240, and all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest, he's an assistant professor of communications at William Patterson University. He worked as a reporter for the New York Daily News, and he's written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Hockey News, and he's the author of another book that we'll take a look at, Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and also Forest Hills. He also wrote three series that sparked efforts to save historic sites, such as the former home of baseball player Jackie Robinson and the longest continually operated movie theater in the United States. His new book, it's titled We Want Fish Sticks, the bizarre and infamous rebranding of the New York Islanders. I'd like to welcome to the show tonight Nick Hirshon. Nick, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. How are you? I love you singing along to We Want Fish Sticks. That's what I was going for there.
We got to get in the mood, Nick, right? Unfortunately, yep. We're going to take a look at that, the infamous chant. Let's talk about last night. How was the barn last night?
It's exactly as everybody thought it was going to be. It was an electric atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was tailgating from early in the morning. The crowd was just so into it. And chants all night long. It was kind of the perfect game. They go down 2-0. They come back 3-2 dramatically. And it was just everything you would expect from the Coliseum, including the long lines for the bathrooms and the concessions. And the
exactly.
Tight corridor. But no, it was really fun to be there. I was so glad that building has had so much history. And as you mentioned, I wrote a book about it. But this was another great chapter in that book.
Any chance centered around our friend the Rangers?
I'm sorry?
Any Ranger chants going on there last night?
There were a lot of derogatory chants.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Sure. I saw one or two people wearing John Tavares 91 jerseys, and I was wondering, are those people maybe Rangers fans, or I don't know. Did you not get the memo of what happened over the summer?
Exactly. Come on, fellas. Let's get up to date here.
It was a raucous crowd, and that's what you're used to at Nassau Coliseum. That's what makes that building so special, right? I mean, that's what the fans love about it and why the experiment at Barclays was almost bound to fail. So they had been circling this date on their calendars for months, and it finally came.
Right. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, so to speak, right?
Yep. Happened, too, and the chicken dance song and all the old hits that they used at Nassau Coliseum for many years to mock the Rangers.
Oh, love it, love it. Gotta love it. Now, let's talk a little bit about the background of this rebranding of the Islanders.
Yeah. So, I mean, my book basically looks at actually this Islanders-Rangers rivalry that you're talking about as being the genesis of the rebranding of the Islanders. That's how deep and rooted that this rivalry is in the Islanders' psyche. Because back in 1994, when the Rangers were on their way to the Stanley Cup, in the first round they sweep the Islanders in embarrassing fashion. The Islanders get outscored 22-3. And then the Islanders are kind of thinking, what do we need to do to kind of change our image? Because our main rival, the one that we've mocked for years with these chants of 1940, referring to last year they had won the Stanley Cup. Now they've won the Stanley Cup. And now we're the ones who haven't won the Stanley Cup in a decade. So the Islanders are looking to change up their brand, and that's what eventually leads us to this fisherman logo.
Terrible. What a terrible decision. Now, some points you mentioned in the book we'll get to. We got Nick Hirsch on tonight with us talking about his book, We Want Fish Sticks. It's a must-read for any Islander fan. The logo itself, how was that derived?
Well, the Islanders were trying to think what separates them from New York City, because they wanted to have that distinction between the Rangers and themselves. And then they start thinking about all these ideas of, well, what's a good symbol of Long Island? And they go through lighthouses, which end up being on the shoulder patch of the fisherman jersey, and seagulls and crabs and lobsters and every sort of thing that you would imagine. And one of the ideas, of course, is a fisherman, specifically because Billy Joel, the singer who is known for being from Long Island and playing all these concerts at Nassau Coliseum, he had created a song, 1989, Down Easter Alexa.
Right.
That refers to the struggles of the East End Baymen, the fishermen on Long Island. And it was a popular song. He was obviously one of the most popular people to ever come from Long Island. So the Islanders say, why don't we look at the music video for Down Easter Alexa and try to be inspired by some of the imagery there. And if you watch it, which your listeners can do on YouTube, it's up, you'll see that it's a bunch of gruff, older, bearded fishermen that look a lot like what ended up being on the Islanders fisherman logo.
Now, it couldn't have been a worse time to do this. I mean, they're in the midst of a slump. You have Mike Milbury at the helm of the club. It was just simply embarrassing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there weren't a lot of positives to take away from these 3 years of the rebranding process. There were little flashes of brilliance and maybe times when you thought they could kind of pull through, and that's what made writing this book so interesting, going back through all of the newspaper and TV coverage of the time when, you know, they get on a little bit of a winning streak or they make a big trade and you think that they're going to have something come through. But for the most part, it was, as you say, embarrassing, humiliating. The Islanders-Rangers rivalry that was so fierce, we just gave the Rangers another way to mock the team. Because now we had this fisherman jersey, and, of course, We Want Fish Sticks becoming the chant that it was at Madison Square Garden and even at Nassau Coliseum when the Rangers fans invaded there. And that's why it became the namesake of my book.
Yeah, it's sort of like, Nick, being abused at school. Then your mother sends you off with shorts and something else embarrassing, and they abuse you even more.
Yeah, there were a few of the players who I spoke to for the book who made that kind of a reference of playing the Rangers of all teams, you know, the team that is our chief rival that you want to put on your best possible showing, and we show up in this logo that looks like the Gorton's Fishermen from the frozen seafood boxes.
Now,
and we have the We Want Fish Sticks, and no more fish sticks chants going throughout the crowd.
Just as a sidelight, I don't mind it now as much as I did then. I think it's kind of like a throwback now. And as we know, they wore it in warm-ups a couple of years ago at Barclays. And I had a short conversation with Matt Martin in the summer, and I handed him a photo to sign, which was him in his warm-up fisherman jersey. And I said, you know, Matt, I don't really mind this that much anymore. He goes, you know, I don't either. I think it's pretty cool, you know. So maybe it's time to bring it back as a throwback, but we haven't seen that as yet. I think they're still battle scarred from that one.
Yeah, I think the Islanders are very reluctant to do anything that would bring back that mockery, because even the other day they announced that they were going to be bringing back the fisherman jersey to the concession stands at Nassau Coliseum, and fans had the very divisive reactions. You know, there were some people who love it. I think a lot of younger people and people like Matt Martin, who didn't really remember what the team was like in 1995. They just view it as this throwback, this cool retro look. So those people kind of love it. And then you have a lot of people who remember what the team was like in that period, and maybe even were fans in the Stanley Cup dynasty era in the early 1980s. And so then they just view this as the departure from tradition. And so I think the Islanders themselves don't really want too much to do with it. Sure, they want to make a buck off of selling it at the Nassau Coliseum stands or online, but I don't know if they're ready to actually wear it again in the game, although a lot of fans would love it, and I would love to see that too. I think it's time. You know, it's been more than 20 years now. I think we can go back and just say, you know, maybe it wasn't a great period in our history, but there were still positive associations with players, just good memories from some of the games. You know, Ziggy Palfy was on that team. There were some good guys.
A prolific scorer.
Yeah.
definitely. Now you have a new book trailer out on Twitter.
Yeah, I just put that out yesterday. And if you go to my Twitter page, at Nick Hirshon, you'll see it. I came up with this, a bunch of different images that I found from my research, trying to just show, like, how crazy this story was. And a few people even commented it could be a movie made out of this book.
Yeah.
To have all the characters of Mike Milbury as the wacky coach and general manager, and John Spano, the con artist who buys the team, all of the zaniness around this. And, you know, the fact that kind of the story from the losing locker room is often more interesting than the winning one.
Right. I could just see that happening, Nick, having a movie made out of the whole situation. As you said, all the players are assembled. I mean, you've got some very decent hockey players on this Fish Sticks club, but it's just destined to crash and burn with this jersey.
Yeah, and the good thing is, if you were going to do a documentary about it, most of these guys are around, which is a great, you know, reason to do it now. That's the reason why I did my book at this time, because all these people are still alive who are involved in this rebranding. So let's get their histories in there. But if you were to do a feature film on it, I think it'd be really fun too, because of just all the zaniness that went on there. That's why I call it the bizarre and infamous rebranding of the New York Islanders. We didn't even talk about the mascot, which has captured a lot of the fans' imagination. Niles, the mascot, who was the first phase of this rebranding process, this red-bearded, gruff-looking guy with bushy eyebrows and
yeah,
a full light atop his hockey helmet. And the guy who played the mascot, Rob DiFiore, I spoke to him for the book, and he just had a lot of interesting memories about fans beating him up in the stands. And
now, did that really happen, Nick? He was assaulted in the stands, this guy?
Yeah, multiple times by different fans, and I could see it happening when you have fans getting drunk, and, of course, fans didn't like the rebrand to begin with, so they kind of view this as the embodiment of the logo, and sometimes fans, I think, forget that there's a guy inside that suit. You're not just taking out your anger at some inanimate object here. So, there were reports of it from the time, so it's not only his word, and there was even a quote that I have in the book from a 10-year-old boy who sees Niles at Nassau Coliseum, and he says to a New York Times reporter, "I'd like to assassinate him." You definitely have reports of that happening, and unfortunately, Rob DiFiore had to deal with the brunt of it.
Yeah, if he said that during today's atmosphere, I think that they'd take him to task. That's a little rough for a little kid. Man, oh, man. Now, there are also reports of the coach spitting on players during that period.
Yeah, that's right. Mike Milbury, during a game versus the Rangers, he says he didn't, but he spit at Ulf Samuelsson, one of the Rangers enforcers, and kind of known for being a sort of dirty player. And what makes it into a bigger issue is that this is a game where, Milbury, after the game, then says, "I didn't really spit on him." That's part of the book trailer that I show. He denies doing it, and then he doesn't really want to talk about it. Years later, and I also include this footage in the trailer, he admits that he did do it, and then he says he lost a lot of respect for Ulf Samuelsson after Samuelsson told the media that Milbury had spit at him. And when Milbury said this, he was actually on an NHL Network broadcast, and his colleagues are looking at him like, "Are you serious?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You lost respect for Ulf Samuelsson? You spit at the guy." And Ulf Samuelsson has some phone footage at the time and was telling the media, "You know, I'm trying to tell my kids at home not to spit, and it's going to be difficult to do that when they see it on TV." And I don't know if
yeah, right.
Genuine or not. But it was another aspect of this Islanders-Rangers rivalry that Milbury obviously had no love for the Rangers, and that's, you know, good for an Islanders coach. But he also showed it on the ice in ways that coaches don't traditionally.
Assaulting them is another story, yeah.
Yeah.
We can definitely see, though, as we spoke about, Nick, guys today like Matt Martin finding it cool to wear the fisherman. But you dug deep, and you found guys like Darius Kasparaitis, Steve Webb, Eric Fischaud, who does the forward in the book, Zygmunt Palfy, who had to live with this. And this was their way of life, because the NHL just won't change your jersey overnight.
Right. Yeah, and for those players, it was difficult. On the one hand, they're in the NHL. They've reached the highest league. You know, this is some accomplishment they want to have since they were kids. And now they're skating for the Islanders, a historic franchise who had won Stanley Cups when they were kids. So this was very meaningful for a lot of the guys to be on Long Island, and yet you have fans and the media focusing so much on the logo that you're wearing on your chest, and you kind of wish you could just move past it. And beyond the logo, of course, there was just all of the wackiness going on with Mike Milbury yelling at them and shoving at his own players and having to be restrained from physical altercations with them, and the up-and-down nature of their potential sale to John Spano,
Then
him being outed as a con artist. So I think that their emotions were all over the place, and unfortunately there were a lot of fans and players who, you know, I kind of feel bad for them. They were rooting for this team, and the players were trying to do what they could to win for Long Island, as Eric says in his foreword, and yet it just didn't pan out that way.
No, definitely not. We have Mr. Nick Hirsch on with us tonight, author of the book We Want Fish Sticks, talking about that really tumultuous period in New York Islander history. Now, another thing that came out of that period, Nick, was the firing of Hall of Famer Jiggs McDonald, and that's when they brought Howie Rose on board.
Yeah, and that was an interesting part of the book. You know, I was trying to make the point that the Islanders say that they're going to rebrand because they want to distance themselves from the Rangers. They lost to the Rangers in 94, as I mentioned earlier, and they want to do something to emphasize the Long Island nature there, the maritime culture, let's say, with the Fisherman logo. Mm-hmm. And yet they bring in a lot of people who had been associated with the Rangers, and one of the most high-profile hires of that time is Howie Rose. So they hired a guy who had been a radio analyst for the Rangers for 6 years. And even though he's known for being an impeccable broadcaster and he has this great command of local hockey history, and he'd worked for the telephone dial-in service at that time, Sports Phone, if people remember that. And
right, yeah.
WHN Radio, WCBS, WFAN, the all-sports radio station. So he has the bona fides to be a legitimate hockey announcer, but so many Islanders fans associate him with the Rangers. And that famous call, Matto, and mm-hmm. Stephen Matto, scores the goal for the Rangers in the playoffs. And he was calling these games leading up to their Stanley Cup victory, the first one in 54 years.
Tough to bring swallow, in a guy, yeah.
Yeah, so to bring in a guy like that, who is so associated with your chief rival, a lot of Islanders fans kind of wonder, is he a spy? Does he really like the Islanders, or is he still going to be rooting for the Rangers at the game? And this is kind of a theme in the book, because there were a lot of people like that who were brought in and then got the fans very skeptical about them. And Don Maloney, who was Islanders general manager, who hired Mike Milbury, he had the same thing going. They hired a PR person who was from the Rangers.
Another Ranger.
A former Ranger. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were lots of people there who, just made the fans a little bit skeptical and, again, went against this idea of what a rebrand should be. It should be holistic. If you're really going to do this, go all in. Now I say that, and I think Howie Rose worked out wonderfully for them. I was so grateful growing up that I got to listen to him on the Islanders TV broadcast. I think he's terrific. And I spoke to him for the book, and it was a terrific experience. But I can understand being a fan at that time and thinking this is kind of a dubious move.
Exactly. Way to make us paranoid, Islanders. Come on now.
Yeah.
Now, another story that you mentioned in the book that I found interesting, Nick, was the call-up of a guy named Jason Herder. He played one game, and unfortunately, he had the Fisherman logo on.
Yeah, so Jason Herder was a defenseman for the Islanders. He's only 25 years old when he gets called up. And he's an interesting story. He was drafted number 8 overall by Vancouver in 89, but he hadn't skated in the NHL, and he had 6 years later still not made it to the NHL. He was the highest drafted player in NHL history to never play in the league. And then he finally gets called up for the Islanders. He skates in warm-ups against Mario Lemieux and the Penguins, and he says that was a really fun experience for him. And then he finally makes his debut the next night against the Hartford Whalers, and the New York Times even calls him a bright spot for the Islanders. And he was on the ice for 3 of their goals that night. He got an assist. He talks in the book about his dad getting to watch him in the game. So that was a positive experience. But it is an interesting idea of, from the fans' perspective, we just look at this as a departure from tradition. This was such a heavily mocked jersey. It's terrible. For a guy like this, okay, maybe it wasn't the ideal logo he would have picked, but, again, it just signifies he made it to the top. He's in the NHL playing mm-hmm. for the Islanders. It doesn't get much better than that. He's on the same ice surface as Mario Lemieux. So it's interesting to talk to Jason Herder, and he also talks in the book about how he hadn't gotten his jersey many years later. They didn't let the players keep their jerseys. Some of them did, but some of them weren't allowed, and he had only played one game for them. And then he had to write to Mike Milbury, who was still involved in the team years later, and say, hey, can I get my jersey? And Mike was willing to do that, which is a nice story. So, yeah, there's a lot of guys like that who I think just respected the fact that they were in the NHL wearing this, and now they've put that jersey framed up in their houses or where they work or whatever, and I think that says something that maybe the fans didn't expect.
Exactly. We've got Nick Hirsch on talking about his book, We Want Fish Sticks, about the rebranding of the Islanders. Certainly a fine book for New York Islander fans, but also hockey fans or sports fans interested in uniforms. There's a lot of people that collect game-used jerseys and stuff, me being one of them. And they're very hard to find, aren't they?
Yeah, some of these jerseys have made their way onto eBay, but they are so expensive. I remember when I was interviewing Garry Kasparaitis, and you said earlier, you mentioned that I mentioned I had Darius Kasparaitis in this book, and he said that he had given away his fisherman jersey at some point. And when I was interviewing him back in 2015, he said he was looking to get a fisherman jersey back, maybe buy one of his game-used jerseys off of eBay or something.
Yeah.
And I said, why do you want it? And he said, oh, I want to wear it and get abused by my friends because they're going to mock the fact that I wore this We Want Fish Sticks jersey. But, yeah, it's a tough jersey to find. I have a Wendell Clark jersey that I actually wore to the game last night, and I'm kind of hesitant sometimes to wear it out because it's valuable. And but I saw a lot of people wearing theirs, and I saw Ziggy Palfy out there last night with the wave back, and it's pretty cool. But that just goes to this larger idea that I was talking about in the book. This was the start of the sports branding industry as we know it. There was always some sales of sports merchandise, but the way that it is now where there's 15 different jerseys for each team, it seems, and every sort of possible item you could want with a team-branded logo. It didn't always used to be that way.
No, definitely not. When I was a kid, Nick, going to Mets games, nobody had a Mets shirt on. That's basically when men used to go to the games looking like Jack Ruby with a suit on, a fedora, you know, with the paper stuck under their arm smoking a cigar is basically how everybody in the stands looked. Nobody had a jersey back then. But another interesting story I want to touch on quick is Steve Webb's association with the jersey.
Yeah, so Steve Webb is kind of at the end of this Islanders rebranding process. And when the Islanders are sold by John Pickett finally, because, of course, John Pickett was the absentee owner of the team in the mid-90s, and he had been there from the dynasty era, he tries to sell the team to John Spanel, but, of course, that blows up in his face because he's outed as a con artist. So then he ends up selling the team to Stephen Gluckstern and Howard Milstein, and when they take over, they run a promotion called True Islander Fan Night. And at one of the games, they ask Steve Webb, who is an enforcer of the team, and I remember growing up watching Steve Webb, and he became a big force for the Islanders in that famous 2002 playoff series versus the Maple Leafs. But at this time, they ask Steve Webb, go out on the ice wearing the fisherman jersey, and we want you to dramatically rip it off in front of the fans to reveal the original Islanders logo underneath. And he kind of recalls, like, what exactly am I supposed to do here? It seems like a gimmick almost akin to pro wrestling more than hockey. And, you know, I've heard some mixed reviews from people about whether that was a good idea or not. I think on the one hand, I'm sure the fans loved it, and it was a great experience to them. It's going to get a cheap roar of approval from the crowd. A lot of people, you know, mentioned how they wanted to burn their jerseys, and they hate the fisherman jersey no matter what. So they enjoy it. But then for some people who were involved in the rebranding of the team, and remember, these were professionals at sports branding firms who maybe if this didn't work out the way they wanted, granted, but still, they're pros. Do you really need to dredge this up and make a circus act out of having a player go out and rip off the jersey? So it's just kind of another bizarre twist in this whole saga.
Definitely. Now, you have a couple of book signings coming up I want to mention for you. If there's any that I miss, please jump in and let us know. You have December 8th at the Queens Library in Glen Oaks, December 29th at the Offside Tavern in New York City, which is really an Islander bar for Islander fans. January 7th out here at Book Review in Huntington. January 10th at the famous Jerry Cosby's in Madison Square Garden before the Isles Ranger games. That ought to be great. And then January 26th out at the East Hampton Library. Any others, Nick?
Yeah, that's right. You got them all for now. I mean, I may be announcing more, but right now that's the slate. I'm trying to hit up Long Island, Manhattan, Queens, get all over and try to reach all the different Islanders fans who are already contacted me on social media sharing all their memories. I got people emailing me, DMing me on Twitter and all this stuff with photos of Niles the mascot, just all their memories from that time. So it's been great. I hope to meet a lot of people at the event you just mentioned.
Beautiful, Nick. Well, I tell you, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. Thanks for taking the time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us. Again, the book, Nick Hirshon, We Want Fish Sticks, The Bizarre and Infamous Rebranding of the New York Islanders. Thanks again, Nick.
Thanks a lot, Bill. I really appreciate the time.
Nick Hirshon, folks. Up next, we'll talk to Olympic great Marty Licori. So stick around.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240, WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the contact us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240. We're in beautiful downtown Merrick, Long Island, New York tonight, speaking to you live. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on the Sunday night, the second day of December in the year of our Lord, 2018. We're waiting to get Marty Licori on the line. Glad you can be with us tonight, though. The great conversation with Nick about the rebranding of the Islanders. The Jets and Giants were in action today. The Jets dropping a tough one. They didn't play that well, as is the habit of the Jets. Giants pulled one out in overtime versus the Chicago Bears. We're waiting for the final word on the Mets blockbuster trade with the Seattle Mariners. Physicals being performed tomorrow. I believe that's when we'll get the final word. With the Rangers, Vic Hatfield's number 11 gets raised to the Garden Rafters tonight. I believe they've already done that. The Rangers are in action. And, of course, we mourn the loss of President George Herbert Walker Bush on this day, who passed away last night. And then we're going to wish everyone a happy Hanukkah. We're going to keep the sports memories rolling along with our next guest, Marty Licori. But first, we're going to take a little commercial break, and we'll be back right after this, folks.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we provide more than $150 billion each year in grants, loans, and work-study funds, making higher education possible for anyone. Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more at studentaid.gov.
Imagine a time when no one person has Parkinson's disease, is debilitated by a stroke, and no family suffers the tragedy of Alzheimer's. Some of the best minds in America are doing more than imagining. The American Brain Foundation is seeking to find cures, where life without brain disease isn't just something we can imagine, it's something we can know.
Join Kevin Sorbo in the fight to cure brain disease. For more information, visit AmericanBrainFoundation.org. We served our country like those before us.
You know, it was a dangerous era. All of Vietnam was dangerous.
The carnage of war left an indelible mark on me.
We came back and built lives. As time went on, we faced new challenges and found support to handle them.
I went to the VA, talked to my doctor.
I started doing groups. I started doing one-on-one counseling.
At MakeTheConnection.net, you can hear our stories and find tools and services available to you.
Our daughter might be drinking or taking something else. We can't talk with her about it. She keeps everything secret. But when I pretend everything is okay, I'm keeping secrets too. My therapist suggested Al-Anon family groups. It was helpful to hear what other parents said. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or visit alanonfamilygroups.org.
Trust me, I'm a doctor.
Trust me, I'm a lawyer.
Trust me, I'm a contractor.
Trust me, I'm a car thief.
It's not always easy knowing who's the good guy and who's the bad guy, especially when it comes to insurance fraud. But know this, if someone wants you to get involved in something because
the insurance companies can afford it,
don't walk away, run. Insurance fraud is a crime, and everyone pays for it, especially the ones who get caught. If you suspect insurance fraud, call us at 1-800-TELL-NICB.
Talking to veterans about the real issues they're dealing with can be uncomfortable, but when their behavior changes, it's time to act. Call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You won't forget your birthday. You shouldn't forget the law. All young men need to register with the Selective Service System within 30 days of their 18th birthday. By registering, you keep yourself eligible for federal loans and Pell Grants, jobs and training. So don't forget to register. Visit SSS.gov on your computer or smartphone, or pick up a registration form at your local post office. It's quick. It's easy. It's the law.
What do I cherish? Precious moments. Watching Dad read my little Eric. That's why I'm so grateful I insisted on an eye exam when I noticed him struggling with the words on the page. We found out Dad has age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. Fortunately, the doctor caught it in time for treatment, so Dad can still read. Protect yourself and your loved ones. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on preventing and managing AMD. A cure is in sight.
Hey. Oh, hey, Deb. I thought you were the radon test guys.
The who test guys?
Didn't you see the paper Sunday? The Surgeon General issued another lung cancer warning.
Oh, like the cigarette warning?
Yeah. They're saying we have to get our houses tested for radon.
I don't smell any radon in my house.
That's because radon is an odorless, colorless, tasteless gas that seeps into your house from underground.
Does this story have a happy ending?
Yeah. You'll be a lot happier once you get your house tested.
Learn more. Visit the EPA at epa.gov/radon. That's epa.gov/radon.
Hi, Mom. Is Claire's birthday party today? Me again, Mom. Where did I put my history book? Hi. Sorry, forgot one last thing. Sometimes it's hard to concentrate. At school, I start looking out the window, and then I forget what I was supposed to be thinking about. I know it seems like I don't care, but I do. It's just difficult for me. Love you, Mom. Bye.
Join parents and experts at Understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues to help your child thrive. Brought to you by Understood.org and the Ad Council.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S.
All right. We are back. Marty LaCoury will not be with us tonight. We don't know why, but we'll try to find out for you. We're going to replay an interview we did a couple of weeks ago with the great Tiger superstar Willie Horton from the 1968 World Championship team. Brian's queuing that up right now. Let me know when you're ready, Brian. All right, we're good to go. Here's Willie Horton.
In the following
Take
program,
care, folks. Have
do
a good night.
Not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240. WGBB Merrick, Long Island, New York is where you are. Bill Donahue, I'll be taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night. It's the fourth day of November, my wife's birthday. Happy birthday to my love. Our engineer, Brian Graves, right across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll talk to the legendary Detroit Tiger, Willie Horton. And in the second half, we'll welcome in the great tennis champion, Pam Shriver. So sit back and relax. With Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB, we're going to have some great memories, some great stories ahead, so stick around. As always, before we begin, social media, Facebook page, Sports Talk 1240. Check it out. Give us a look. Then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter. Check the Twitter feed at Sports Talk 1240. All past shows on the website, www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, our first guest tonight, as I said, a Detroit Tigers legend. During his great career, he hit 273, 325 homers, 1,163 RBIs, four-time All-Star, a world champ, of course, with the Tigers in that magical season of 1968. He had his number 23 retired by the Tigers in the year 2000. I'd like to welcome into Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Willie Horton. Willie, good evening.
Good evening, Bill.
It's great to have you with us, Willie. Willie, of course.
Excuse my voice. I'm a little hoarse.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit down under the weather, too, Willie. Of course, we met in Cooperstown during induction weekend when you came up and gave that great presentation with Bruce Markison in the Bullpen Theater. We enjoyed that immensely. Now, starting out, Willie, you were the youngest of 21 kids.
Oh, yes. That's a whole lot of them.
Yeah,
I'm very fortunate and been blessed. I'm the last boy left out of 11, and I got one sister out of 10 left. But a lot of great memories.
Definitely. Now, when you were younger, you hit a home run at Tiger Stadium when you were 16 years old at an all-city game.
Yeah, I was a freshman coming in high school at this all-city game. And then from there, everybody thought I was coming out of high school. But the following year, I signed a hardship case to help my parents, and very fortunate went on and had a pretty good career, thank the good Lord upstairs.
Now, you signed with the Tigers in 61. You played for Duluth up on Lake Superior during that time. You made your debut in 63. Now, you hit a pinch-hit home run off a great Hall of Famer.
Yes, Robert Robin. I never forget that. I got the ball and took him signing, and I still got that ball today.
Oh, wow. That's a great story, Willie. What did he throw you?
Well, really, I don't really know.
Okay,
You know, I had to find me. I was out there and should have been in the dugout, but I was out in the bullpen on my high school buddies out there by the bullpen. I was out there enjoying them returning back on with the Tigers, and they looked for me. I had to go through the stand and get to the dugout because I didn't want them to see me coming from the bullpen. So I went through the stand and came back up the back way, and then I'm pinching. I didn't know who was pitching.
Yeah.
Until I found out later, and then almost fainted. My dad, that was one of my dad's favorite ball players. You know, we talked not only what he did as a great pitcher, but as a human being, as a great human being, and what he was doing in life beyond the field.
Yeah, he was a great man, Robin Roberts. He certainly was. A great Hall of Famer. Now, most of the time, Willie, you seem to have great strength as a hitter. You hit a lot of balls out using only a one-handed swing.
Well, that's what they said, but I've always thought, you know, after made contact, but, you know, I got their reputation from that, and, I kind of, you know, they didn't let me live it down, but, I was just blessed. I was just fortunate. I ended up playing 18 years. I had some misfortune early in my career. You know, I had a couple of Achilles operations. I didn't think I was going to play anymore after my fourth year, and I ended up playing some kind of way, playing 14 more years.
That's true. Now, the story of Willie Horton goes well beyond baseball, folks. If we look back in 1967, there's something that's called in Detroit the 12th Street Riot. And Willie tried very bravely to restore peace in the neighborhood there. He went down in his Tiger uniform, stood on his car, pleading for calm in the area. Willie, take us through that.
Well, I remember we had a doubleheader with the Yankees, and actually, I hit a home run the first game, and then second game, I seen all this smoke, and they brought us off the field and told we had to go home and what was going on in the city, and they had contacted us, you know, for our safety late on, but for some reason, I, you know, putting all my street clothes in my duffel bag, and I end up over on 12th Street and by myself on top of the car trying to bring some peace to the city, and one of the fierce things that I think about it now after many years, I get a little nervous now that at the time I was young, you just did things, but it's something that I don't know why I did it, but I guess when the good Lord have control over you, you just don't know why you do things. I did what I could do to try to bring some peace.
You did. Now, despite your impassioned pleas to the folks, Willie, the rioting continued in Detroit during that time.
Yes, it did, and you know, I got back involved after the season, and actually I've seen some things came out of the riot, and up to this day I've seen some good things, bad things. Most people talk about the bad thing, but I've seen a lot of good things happen from the riots, and some of the things happened to the riot, what I see going on in Detroit today, that was all staged back there, the beginning of returning the city around and what we're doing today.
So things have a funny way of turning around, Willie.
Exactly. I tell you, you never know, but I guess, you know, but from the walk that I had in Lakeland many years ago, my freshman year in baseball, and I had a walk from downtown Lakeland to spring training, that's about 5 or 6 miles, I guess, and I couldn't ride no taxis. You know, I thought they were playing a joke on me, but that's just the way it was in race ride, and then I didn't realize that, and then I get there, I had to stay in a separate hotel from the white player in the back dorm, and then I went through the first 4 or 5 years like jacket, but I think I look back, it's something I would live it over again because it got me young to feel. I got to meet great people like Bob Hope and people like that, and I still work with the military bases right to today, going down for graduation, inviting them to spring training, et cetera. But, you know, that little walk took me young to feel, and not only in the ride in 67, other things I'm still doing in life.
Willie Horton with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. So many players, so many guys we've spoken to on the show, Willie, relate the same type of stories about baseball in the South during that time. Ed Charles, bunch of people, and it's a sin what existed in the South during those days, but that's the history of this country.
Well, you know, that's something that my dad always said, don't worry about Old Man River, just try to work with it and go along with it and try to be come part of what's going on and try to improve things, and I kind of lived through the water in that, and all the hardship that I had in baseball, I think it made a better person, a better man, I mean, where I reach back and try to do a lot of things to help a lot of people, and you know, it's just the way it was at that time, you know, it's something that I'm doing right now. I'm doing some things down in Florida now that I learned through that course of my career, my life at Yonder Field, that I think we're trying to get our school and churches back together and get our community back. And I think most of the things is, that's the key, I think, to anything that in our society that's going on now. We can bring them two back together. I think we get our community back. You know, everybody talk about drugs. Drugs been here, but them, for some reason in the last 40 or 30, 50 years or so, I've seen churches kind of separate from each other and filter down in the school. We lost a lot of our community. But if we can bring them back, I think we have a community back. And that's something I'm doing down in Polk County in Lakeland, Florida now, that we started in Lakeland. Now we cross Polk County, this partnership, and with field trip, working with the seniors and veterans and youth program, education people, and everybody's a full partnership. And just going out with a vision, and this thing just took off. And it's the last couple of years I've been under the weather, but I'm so proud of what the people did, the volunteer staff, and now we're going all the way across Polk County with the program.
Sounds good, Willie. And that is why we tell folks, and I'm sure you'll agree, Willie, why it's so important to get out and vote on Tuesday.
Exactly. It's very important. You know, people, if you're getting back, I think we kind of let that got away from out of hand through the years, and people get back more involved and get the young adults back involved and vote, and you make a difference. And that's the only way we can get our country back, to do things that the people want to do. I think sometimes we caught up in what everybody else want to do, but we got to get back to society and what people want us to do in life.
Very good point, Willie. Now, we'll look back. 1968, it was supposed to be the year of the pitcher. They lowered the pitcher's mound because of the guys had such great success in 1967. You still hit 36 home runs in 1968.
Well, I tell you, you know, I was very fortunate. That year, I remember Frank Howard called me. He won the home run thing, and I think he beat me about 4 or 5. And I missed some money the season with a concussion. And he thought, said, well, you know, I still share this with you because I think you might have won it. But, you know, I was just very fortunate that I came up to a time in my career that I had a lot of people I looked up to in life and baseball, and had a lot of people supporting and guiding me. And I don't forget Ernie Banks always called me. I guess Ernie called me about every 3-4 days and talked to me about keep your head up. He always called American League the Republican League. He said, you should have signed over in the Democrat League. You know, as kids, and we end up playing big league baseball or basketball or some kind of professional sports.
Great, great Bill Freehan. Yeah. Now, let's talk about Bill Freehan and a play from the 1968 series, Willie, that you were pivotal in this play. The Cards are leading the series 3-1. They're up in that game 3-2. Now, Lou Brock doubles with one out. What happens next?
Well, what happened, he got double, and then so I know who was pitching. First of all, I was like, in my mind, I know who was pitching, been in the right position at the right time, and I know who was hitting, and know Luke Brock. But what made that play, that in the report that we all read from All-Star Break on, if you remember, Luke Brock brought base stealing back in the lineup.
Oh, sure. Right.
And then he started picking up bad habits from All-Star Break on, we saw. He'd be at first base. He used to drift in the third. Same thing he did when he's on second base. He drift in, and then didn't then help him because the coach at third base or the guy on the batter's circle supposed to help him, on deck supposed to help him slide, et cetera. Well, that's Luke Brock running. But that particular play, it was two plays in one, that in my mind, that it was a must play. And Bill Freehan knew the play also. And if Bill didn't see him, Biggest stride, we had to keep the guy off second to stay in the game some type of way. But he let it come through. He broke his stride, and that was the turning point. And we came back and won that game and went on and won 3 games in a row. That's how we won the World Series. But I tell a lot of outfielders, a lot of professional people and young kids, you know, you got to do your homework, you know. And things like that, I thank my coaches I had in my past that helped me learn the game that much, that I didn't always study the game. I always know when I leave on the road, when I leave the hotel, I always have my game plan on before I get to ballpark. I go out there and enjoy the fan, and at home I did the same thing. And that go back to all of my coaches I had throughout my career, that I'm just very blessed that the good Lord puts around me with great coaches, help mold me into what I accomplish as a professional athlete.
Certainly, Willie. Yeah. Now, Willie Horton with us tonight on the show. That particular play that we spoke about, Willie, the great Hall of Famer, Lou Brock, 3,000 hits, all the stolen bases. Mm-hmm. We'll never know why Lou didn't slide in that play.
Well, that came from that bad habit, I tell you.
Yeah.
And that's, and Lou, it was very successful. I think you know, I'm selling over 70 bases that year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Right.
But that came from just getting lazy, and then we, in outfielders that, in outfield, noticed that outfield just lobbed the ball back in, and just all of us doing our homework before the series started from scouts' reports, and it turned the series around.
It certainly did. Now, did you feel bad, Willie, when you joined the Mariners, your career progressed, that you
had to move to DH? No, I didn't.
I came out of retirement.
I was managed over in Venezuela and that year, and one of my players, I guess we got to say Gates Brown.
Gates Brown,
I call him Mr. Brown. I remember meeting him in 61. I left home in Tampa, Florida, and he called me on the phone, and he said, this is Willie Horton. I said, yes, sir. He said, I think you better walk around here and meet the Gator. And I never forget, we was in Tampa, and I walked down Lemon Street, the street he's standing on, and he said, I'll be sitting on the porch in the swing, and I walked on the step, and he said, have a seat. And he looked at me, and he looked around, and he said, young man, I don't know if you tell me one thing, was that real money you signed for? I said, do what? To our career, y'all achieving. I married a house woman because of you. I said, well, I'm sorry about that, but Gates Brown, I think, that, and go beyond that, I take Mickey Stanley, but all my teammates, I always look at them as my extended family and, something that, you know, you spend more time with them, your own people, and you grow very close to them. So, but them, Stanley, North, and all these guys, Bill Freehand, you know, I think them two and Billy Freehand three, maybe. About the closest I could ever get to any outside member of my family.
Wonderful stories, Willie. Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure having you with us tonight, Willie.
Thank you.
I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to be with us up here in New York.
All right, and just tell everyone hello from me, and maybe next year I'll see you at Cooperstown again.
I hope so, Willie. I'll look forward to it. Have a good night.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.